Good evening. Welcome to the Wildish Theater. My name is Mike Eister. I'm the president of the City Club of Springfield. And these are our sponsors for the event tonight. Please thank them for their work and their sponsorship. Our MC tonight is Dan Egan, longtime active person in the community and contributor to just making the place better all around. Dan recently served 20 years as the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce of Springfield and is currently serving as the general manager of the Wildish Theater. So please join me in welcoming Dan to the podium.
Thank you, Mike. I was afraid when he started, Dan served 20 years in maybe Salem and never without running for election. Well, welcome everybody to the fabulous Wildish Theater. For some of you, it might be your first time here. We're in our 10th year, and on behalf of the board of directors and myself, we're really proud to host this event here tonight. We hope to do much more of this in the future. So right now, I'm going to bring out the candidates, and one at a time, so that you can put a name to a face if you haven't up to this point. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the rules, and how questions will be handled and how questions from you will be handled, and we'll get on with the debate. So let's welcome our candidates here. Let's start with Brad Avakian, Democrat, Portland, Commissioner of Bureau and Labor and Industry. Brad, please. Let's welcome Brad. Richard Devlin, Democrat, Tualatin, State Senator. Richard. Val Hoyle, Democrat, Eugene, State Representative. Val. Sid Lycan, Republican, Springfield, Lane County Commissioner. And Dennis Richardson, Republican, Central Point, businessman and past state legislator. Let's have a hand for all of our candidates. The first thing to say is, it wasn't Democrats and then Republicans. That is really the alphabetical order of our candidates. It just worked out that way. I also want to welcome KMTR. TV is here. They've been here and got the word out that we're going to be here tonight doing some live shots. And then KLCC, there's a gentleman from KLCC way at the top, and he's going to be recording this for a play, I think, next Wednesday. Thank you for both being here. It's important to have you here. I have some opening remarks about this forum and about some of the sponsors and how we're going to do things tonight. So I'm just going to read this. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation in government, works to increase understanding of major public policy issues, and influences public policy through education and advocacy. And I'm happy to say that I've served on their advisory committee for some time. The League of Women Voters of Lane County do not support or oppose any political party or candidate. The League works to promote political responsibility through informed and active participation in government and to act on selected governmental issues. Here are the rules for today's forum. The debate will begin with an opening statement by each candidate for a maximum of 2 minutes. And what we're going to do, just so the candidates know, I'm going to start with Mr. Avakian and go through, and when we do the closing ones, I'll start with Val and come this way. Following the opening statements in the first session, there will be questions from the moderator, that would be me, and questions that are submitted by the sponsors of this debate. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question, and they will do so by going to one of these two microphones here in the front. The second portion of the forum will consist of questions from the audience, which will be vetted by the League of Women Voters, Springfield City Club, and the League of United Latin American Citizens, and that's what's going on at this table right here. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the question. There are timers in front, and the candidates have asked me to give a little demonstration of how you're going to keep them on time, so demonstrate your timing. There are 3x5 cards here in the room, and if you have any questions, please put those on the card and pass them to one side. You'll see some volunteers on either side, of the rows here. They'll pick them up and bring them to the table. We will get to your questions. The sponsor questions have a specified period of time, and we'll switch to your questions and get through as many as we can. We will close the forum. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for a closing statement, again, here at the podium. If you have cell phones, and I got 2 robocalls today, you might be getting some. So if you can, silence your phone, and I'll try to figure out how to do mine, too. Please hold your applause for candidates so that we may address as many questions as possible. And we've already determined the order, and this is why Mr. Avakian is here. So the next question will go to Mr. Lykin and on down, so everybody has a chance to answer the question first. So we've done the introductions of our candidates. The next thing to do is to have opening statements. And so we'll go in the order that you see here on stage, and I would ask Mr. Avakian to come up and begin his 2-minute opening statement.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, League of Women Voters, for hosting this important forum. I've always been the kind of Democrat that puts our progressive values into action. As Labor Commissioner, I've put more than $22 million in the pockets of Oregonians that have been discriminated against or treated unfairly and cheated out of their wages. I've trained thousands for living wage jobs with women participating at twice the national average and returned 21st century shop classes to our schools. With the Oregon Council on Civil Rights, created the roadmap to eliminate the wage gap between women and men. And as senator, took on climate change by passing Oregon's Renewable Energy Act. As Secretary of State, I'll use the State Land Board to promote renewable energy technologies and launch Oregon into the global clean energy economy. Audit private corporations that contract with the state to ensure that our tax dollars are being used as intended, and increase civic engagement and voting amongst young Oregonians by expanding civics education in our schools and by starting a new program to teach the procedure and the value of voting, the Oregon Youth Vote. I've always turned our progressive values into action. Because of that, I've earned the sole endorsement of some of Springfield's finest legislators, former legislators like Senator Bill Morissette and Representative Terry Beyer, and organizations that we trust like NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, Mother PAC, Basic Rights Oregon, the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, Sierra Club, and Oregon's teachers. Today, I hope to earn your support too. Thank you for this forum, and thank you for everything you do to help move progressive values forward in Oregon. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Sid Lykin. Sid?
Well, good evening, and thank you to the League of Women Voters for having this forum. Much appreciated. And first of all, welcome to Springfield. And it's great to be here at the Wildish Theater, such a great cornerstone of our downtown. As I've traveled around the state, one thing I've heard over and over again from folks has been this. Let's get back to business. Let's end the picky partisanship, and let's focus on getting Oregon back on track. You know, as a fifth-generation Oregonian, I was actually born in Roseburg and raised in rural Douglas County. In fact, my family was in both the wood products industry and the land development industry in the state for over 100 years. And people have asked me, so Sid, why Secretary of State? Well, first of all, Secretary of State is an executive position. And if you look at my background, my career as both a mayor and as a county commissioner, that's really what I focused on, more on the executive side. And if you look at the duties of the Secretary of State, the head of elections, the audits, the corporations division, archives, and you're one of three, along with the governor and the state treasurer that's sitting on the state land board. One of the things we can do is bring common sense approach back to how we govern Oregon. And as a county commissioner, we are heavily involved in elections. I chair the Finance and Audit Committee at Lane County, so I work with both our financial and performance auditors and actually understand what audits can do to help govern. Corporations Division. I have a great plan to really move the Corporations Division. So it's not just about business registration or UCC filings, but it's about making sure that those who want to start a business or expand a business will have the suite of information that's available at the Secretary of State's office to become successful. Now, the State Land Board, we want to make sure it works for all of us. And especially with advanced wood products such as cross-laminated timber, Oregon's future looks very, very bright in manufacturing. Again, thank you so much for having us. Appreciate it.
Next, we hear from Richard Devlin.
Well, thank you very much for you all being here this evening, and particularly thank you to the League of Women Voters. My name is Richard Devlin. For those of you whose memory goes back that far, you may remember that the person I defeated many years ago was Bob Tiernan, a notable state representative for probably notable negative things. If you knew Bob, you know what a good thing that was. Since that time, I am proud to have worked at literally every level of government and successfully improved the delivery of services to people and communities at every level. During my 20 years in the legislature, I've served as the vice chair of rules and elections in the House, and later as the chair of rules and elections in the Senate, as the Democratic leader. During that period, I took a leadership role in implementing vote by mail, a centralized voter registration system, online voter registration, initiative reform, and have been a leading proponent of motor voter and expanding voter access. For the last 6 years, I've served as the co-chair of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means and the co-chair of the two joint audit committees. In those roles, I've been intimately involved in every part of state government. Why is all this important? Because the Secretary of State's two primary roles are being the chief elections officer and the chief auditor of public accounts. In these roles, the Secretary of State must ensure that our electoral system is fair, impartial, and that government is efficient, effective, and financially responsible. Experience isn't the only criteria. Values are important also. And I've spent my career not just espousing those values, but delivering them in good times and in tough times for schools, for critical services, for seniors and the disabled, and for the protection of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. Finally, I would like to close by saying that when it comes to the specific skills, experiences, and record applicable to the office we are running for, I know I am the one who can best make the Secretary of State's office work for Oregon, and why I'm looking forward to demonstrating that here tonight.
Thank you. And next, Dennis Richardson.
It's time for Oregon to have greater accountability, transparency, and integrity in our state government. Now, many of you know I ran for governor, and I was retired from politics. I was done a year ago. I'd put 12 years in the legislature. I'd been co-chair of Ways and Means. I'd been elected unanimously by the Democrats and Republicans in the House as Speaker pro tem, and I'd run for governor for 15 months. And I knew I was done when I was told that that there may be a corruption at the top, but actually what was said was the governor may be corrupt, but he's our governor. And then something happened. I realized as I was holding my granddaughter, just a little baby. And I was thinking, what's life going to be like for her to grow up in Oregon? And I realized, well, she's got good family, and we'll have a lot of strength. But I thought, what about the thousands of students that are broke, that are growing up in North Portland, where they're graduating roughly 50% of their students? I mean, does it trouble you that we have high schools that are graduating nearly 100% of their students and others that are graduating nearly 50%? I mean, are you concerned that we have almost every week another announcement of abuse of children in foster care, where they're being physically or sexually abused or even starved? As chief auditor of this state, I'll be able to help make sure that we have accountability in these programs. We've wasted over $1.5 billion on such things as Cover Oregon and the CRC Bridge Project and energy tax credits. That waste cannot continue. And so I'm looking for your support for me to be Secretary of State so that we can put an end to such waste and abuse and restore accountability, transparency, and integrity to the office of Secretary of State.
Thank you. And our final opening statement will come from Val Hoyle.
Thank you. I'm going to fix this a little bit. I'll stand on my tiptoes. I'd like to thank the Springfield City Club, the League of Women Voters, and LULAC for putting on this this opportunity for us to talk to you about why we're running to become your next Secretary of State. I was very lucky. I grew up in a family where I knew my voice mattered in the political process. My father was a pro-life Democrat, president of the Firefighters Union, and I walked picket lines with him and worked on campaigns when I was 8 and 9 years old. And my mother was a pro-choice Republican working for reproductive health care before Roe versus Wade. And so I grew up in a family where there were lots of political discussions, and I knew my voice mattered. So when I turned 18, my friend said to me, "You're 18, do you know what that means?" And I said, "Yes, I can vote in the next election." And she said, "I was going to say you could drive to Rhode Island and buy beer, but I guess you could vote." And when we came here to Lane County, and I found out on the basis of the school district and the quality of life, I found out about Measure 5. And because I knew my voice mattered, I got to work, became president of the PTO, chair of the Democratic Party of Lane County, ran for office, became state representative and House Majority Leader. And during that time, we passed some of the most progressive legislation in the nation, whether it was clean fuels, background checks on private gun sales, tuition equity, or what I'm most proud of, which is automatic voter registration, adding over 300,000 voters to the rolls. I'm running for Secretary of State because I want to make sure that all those newly registered voters know that their voice matters in the process, no matter what part of the state that they're from. I come from Lane County, I will serve from Lane County, and I hope to earn your support tonight.
Thank you, candidates. And we're going to move into the question portion of this, and remember that you have 1 minute. The timers are right in front of you. Some of the questions are short. Some of the questions are rather lengthy. I'll give you a warning on the long ones so you pay attention a little bit more to those. I do have an option of asking a question or two if it occurs to me. Nothing does right now. First one is the shortest question of the evening. And again, we will start with Brad Avakian here. What are your qualifications for the position of Secretary of State? And again, one of the two microphones in front here. 1 minute.
Incredibly important in being Secretary of State is the experience, not just to know how the legislative process works. Many of us have been in legislative bodies, have served in leadership in legislative bodies, but I'm the only candidate in this race that has actually run a state agency successfully, and I've done it for the last 8 years with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. An agency that is similar in size and in many ways similar in mission to that of the Secretary of State. And in addition to that, I think it's important, too, to come to the job with a vision, to look not just at the job in ways that it's always been done, but in what it has the potential to do. And that's why you see me talking about bringing civics education back to the schools, just like I brought shop class back to the high schools and middle schools as labor commissioner, using the state land board to advance environmental issues and a clean energy economy for the state.
Thank you, and we'll go right in order here.
Well, thank you, and first of all, so the qualifications. As I mentioned before in my opening comments, my background, especially on the governing side, I made a choice, and that was to pursue more of the executive leadership. So I have been mayor of one of the 10 largest cities in the state. I'm now a county commissioner of the fourth largest county in the state, which is, by the way, a home rule chartered county, which gives you even more extensive influence as well. And so as a county commissioner in particular, it lends itself quite well to what the Secretary of State's job is. Chief elections. Counties handle elections. As I mentioned before, I chair the Finance and Audit Committee, so I have direct relationship, direct oversight with financial and performance auditors at Lane County. And as well as for the corporations division, I was able to start and run a successful business for many years and understand how this is done and why. And counties are the keeper of the records, our archives. And my background really will show my strength as far as serving on the state land board with the governor and state treasurer. Thank you.
The Secretary of State has many roles described both in statute and in the Constitution. But the two most important roles are the roles I've already identified, being the Chief Elections Officer and being the Chief Auditor of Public Accounts. When I talked about the committees I've served on, those were the committees for 8 years that dealt with every election issue that would ever come before the Secretary of State. And I'm proud of my record there, particularly proud of my record in terms of improving access and fighting efforts to deter people from access to the ballot. Then on the other side is the Chief Auditor of Public Accounts. I've been on Ways and Means for 11 years. People say that there is no person in the state that has a broader knowledge of state government than I do. And that's going to be chief to the importance that the auditing role can be for Oregon, because there is a lot that can be done through the auditing process, and I believe I can bring it to an entirely new level that will start to address some of the things that are important to Oregonians in delivery of services and ensuring that people get the services they deserve and that the quality and the outcomes of those services are what we expect them to be.
I've been preparing to be our Secretary of State for 45 years, and I didn't even know it. I mean, 45 years ago, I was flying helicopters in Vietnam, and I learned a valuable lesson for government, and that is that it's not just about having authority, but it's also being responsible for those over whom you have authority. I've learned as an attorney for 32 years, just a small town attorney in Central Point, working with folks and helping them, that it didn't matter what what really mattered was that I cared about each individual as a person, and then it mattered what I knew. I've been in the legislature for 12 years. I've been co-chair of Ways and Means, as I mentioned before. I've been able to serve in all capacities in my community, or many capacities in my community, as well as the state. This is all preparation. I've got one son and eight daughters. That prepares you for politics. Thank you.
What qualifies me to be Secretary of State is my experience, my work experience, my skill set, and my collaborative leadership style. I spent 25 years in the private sector working in the bicycle industry and retail and management and international trade. I've managed hundreds of people on four different continents at the same time. I was the international warranty manager for Trek Bicycles. Although I've only been in the legislature for 6.5 years, I've been able to get a lot done. And that is my reputation, is that I'm fair, I'm straightforward. And although I'm very proud of the progressive legislation we passed, I was able to do it while maintaining very strong relationships with people across the political spectrum. And that is essential. That is, the person that's running elections, the corporations division, and most importantly, audits, needs to be trusted. And you need someone that, when the audits show that something needs to be done, can actually take those audits off the shelf and make something happen. And my reputation in the legislature is someone that can do just that.
Thank you, candidates. I have my first follow-up question. Secretary of State serves if the governor becomes unable to serve and becomes the head of the state of Oregon at the state level. And who would ever, I mean, that will never happen, right? I want you to think for a minute. I'd like each of you to answer in one word what might qualify your highest quality to be governor of this state. And give everyone a minute to think about that. But just one word, and we start with Sid Lykin.
Just one word? Oh, boy. One word. 1 minute I get for one word. Okay. My one word is pragmatism.
My one word is informed.
Boiling it down to one word, trustworthy.
My one word is hyphenated. Soccer mom.
That counts.
Vision.
Thank you. And I just wanted to prove that politicians can be brief when held to one word. On to a little bit of a lengthier, complex question here for all candidates, and we'll start with Mr. Devlin on this one. Minority groups are underrepresented in state government. Are there changes to our voting system that would improve that situation? Specifically, what is your position on a proportional representation system in order to improve representative democracy in diverse populations? Mr. Devlin.
Well, I think the question you ask is more complex than it appears on the surface. So I'm going to answer the portion of the question that I think is easiest for me to answer at this particular time. And that's one of the things, in terms of increasing participation, I think that one of the things that we clearly need to do is to offer ballots and voter information in the first language of the individual that is voting. The second question, in terms of, is proportional representation. I'm not so sure that that can constitutionally be done, but I do think one of those issues is important, is occasionally, about every 10 years, the Secretary of State may be involved in redistricting and trying to see that community of interests are represented there, and that you reflect some of the communities of interest in terms of racial and ethnic, and you don't try to divide them, so that you try to ensure that people have representation, I think is a very important portion of the job. Now, the legislature one time in recent decades has agreed, but in most cases it has went to the Secretary of State.
It's a difficult question, because we need to make sure that everyone, regardless of their background, has a fair opportunity to be involved in the elective process. Part of it has to deal with education, because many of the areas where we have the lowest graduation rates are also those that have the highest minority attendance. And so we need to ensure that we focus our efforts to see that all young people have a good education, regardless of their background. As far as proportional voting is concerned, we have a system, and the system's been in place for 240 years since the Declaration of Independence, and before that is our in the colonies. And it makes room for all to have an opportunity to vote, all Americans. That means that you're expected to have some knowledge about the way the system functions, some knowledge about the language of this of our country, and that is going to be necessary for you to be able to participate to the full advantage. And so we need to ensure that we have education and opportunities based on all of those aspects.
There are a number of different countries that have proportional representation, and the reason that they put that into place, and usually it's on gender, that is to combat basically the institutional bias that keeps people that aren't represented in the system from being represented in the system. I don't think that at this point we're ready to have that, but I do believe that we need to do more to make sure that we have a government that looks like the people that they're representing. And so that is why I did sponsor the bill to have voting and ballot information in different languages. It is why I've worked with the NAACP AXO program and to mentor young people of color to allow them to understand that it is the House of Representatives is their house, that it is their place, and that if you're an American citizen, then you should be able to vote. And I think reaching out, you know, whether it's in rural areas, whether it's in people who live in high poverty areas, they don't feel like their voice matters in the process. We need to do everything we can to make sure people are engaged.
This is a very personal question for me as somebody who has spent an entire career as a civil rights attorney, heading the state civil rights division as your labor commissioner, breaking down barriers and providing access for people. In my office as Secretary of State, everyone's going to have a voice. You'll see same-day voter registration for me. You'll see state forms and ballots and the voter's pamphlet in first language. You'll see all of that on an app, on a smartphone. It's more than just putting policies and procedures into place, though. It's about building relationships and having a personal investment in communities of color and with young folks and getting them involved. There's a reason that Acción, that the Oregon Black Political Convention, that the Scanner newspaper have endorsed me in this race, because I have spent a lifetime breaking down barriers and making sure that everybody has got a voice in our system.
So when I was first elected mayor, one of the things I realized in Springfield is that we had an extraordinary Latino community. And we saw an influx of Latinos coming into our city for a reason, because we were welcoming. And one of the things I was so proud of is our city council made sure that we had people in each of our departments, not just in public safety, planning, public works, who were bilingual, because what we found is how many small businesses were being created in Springfield by Latino-owned businesses. They were creating opportunity. We can use that same roadmap to make sure we're inclusionary, not only just to creating business opportunities, but creating opportunities for everyone to have a voice. And that's one thing that I think has made this city so strong over the years and will continue to be strong, is because of that inclusionary mindset that we've had, something I've been very proud of, and I think we'll continue to lead in that direction here in Springfield.
Okay, thank you all. This is a longer question. The Secretary of State, the Governor, and the State Treasurer serve as the Oregon State Land Board. One of the state-owned lands that the board has responsibility for is the 93,000-acre Elliott State Forest located in the Coast Range between Coos Bay and Reedsport. Most of this forest is part of the Oregon School Fund lands devoted to supporting public education statewide. There is currently a process that could result in the sale of this forest to private parties. Although the offers are due before you would take office, if elected, it is expected that the new land board will vote on the final sale approval. How would you decide among the multiple offers? Would you honor the current process or reject it in favor of keeping the Elliott Forest in public hands? And we will start with Mr. Richardson.
This is a hugely challenging issue, because on the one side, we have state lands that are supposed to be generating revenue for the benefit of our school system, and we know that they need the money. On the other hand, we want to ensure that we have an environmental policy that will protect our forests for generations to come. But what we have, because of the division, is a lack of management completely. We're losing money on these forests. Instead of generating, they're actually costing us just to maintain them. And what do? We watch the clock tick so that every August or September, we wonder, will we lose the Elliott to a huge forest fire that puts tons of carbon emissions into the air? We need management. I will support the laws that were given by our policymakers, and as part of the board, we will evaluate the various options and make a determination. To say what the determination would be now would be to be presumptive, since I am not in that position yet to know what the factors really are. Thank you.
The current process that is in place to determine what should happen to the Elliott Forest basically has put forward a proposal that if the Elliott State Forest were to be sold, it would be sold to someone that would ensure that the environmentally sensitive areas were protected, that recreational opportunities would be available, that the forest would be managed appropriately. I personally do not feel that we should sell the Elliott Forest into private interests. We have about 775,000 acres of state lands and navigable waterways. I believe that we should be good stewards of that which we were given in our state lands. We should manage those appropriately and keep those for our children and our children's children.
Well, and I could not disagree more with Dennis Richardson on this point. There is nothing challenging or confusing about this issue. The State Land Board is charged with managing our state lands and waterways to their best economic benefit in order to support the Common School Fund. Taking a gem like the Elliott Forest and selling it off to private interest does neither. There will not be a sale of the Elliott Forest under my watch on that State Land Board. And instead, what you'll see me doing is making proposals to move us towards a clean energy economy, using state lands and waterways for the development of geothermal technologies in central and southern Oregon, environmentally safe solar fields in the east, wave technologies on the coast. Oregon is going to become not only a global leader in the fight against climate change, but we are finally going to enter this booming clean energy economy, and that's how we're going to take care of our schools.
So the Elliott State Forest, actually I grew up right down by the Elliott State Forest and actually used to watch it work for Oregonians. In fact, if you see our schools from the past, they were receiving tremendous amounts of money, not only from our state forest, but from our federal forest as well, because they were not only putting people to work, but they were building schools and communities. The Elliott State Forest and all of our state forests, we have an incredible opportunity here to make them work. Right now, Oregon is on the cusp to be not only a national, but an international leader in advanced wood products. Cross-laminated timber. I want people to really read on cross-laminated timber. Building commercial buildings, skyscrapers. They're doing it in Europe and have been for quite some time out of wood instead of concrete and steel. This will not only put people to work, it will actually make sure that our schools are funded, and we have an incredible opportunity here. I've talked to leaders in the wood products industry. They have not only told me it's a future, but it is here now. I wish people would have an opportunity to tour D.R. Johnson down in Riddle, the first certified CLT manufacturer in the United States.
First, I think it's important to understand that the State Land Board does not have purview over all state lands. They have purview over a wide range of lands that are somewhat more limited, but particularly the lands we're talking about now are forest lands. And they make up a relatively modest portion of about the 780,000 acres we have between forest lands and range lands. And the Elliott is the majority of those forest lands under the Common School Fund. There's a little bit of the Clatsop and a little bit of the Tillamook that's in the Common School Fund. There's a fiduciary responsibility there, but that's a long-term responsibility, not a short-term responsibility. It's for this generation and future generations. And right now, I've looked at all the documents, and I don't see the sale going forward as being in the best interest long-term of those generations. It might be benefit for short-term, but not long-term. And I think the current State Land Board, given that there are going to be two replacements on the State Land Board in the new election, regardless of what happens, doesn't actually believe that will go through unless they can complete the process, which I don't believe they can.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
It's time for us to turn to audience questions, and they will go to 8 o'clock, and then we will go to closing statements, and that will be the forum. So thank you for your questions here, and I'll just take them in the order that I have them, and we'll start with Val Hoyle with this one. What would be your number one money in politics, and that's in quotes, reform if you are elected?
Thank you. That's an excellent question, and it's difficult to boil it down to just one thing. I think publicly financed campaigns help even the playing field. I certainly would like to see campaign finance limits that are appropriate, not so small that they drive our money into independent expenditures that are not transparent. We need to have transparency. We need to even the playing field so that small donors have the same power as large donors. We need to have appropriate limits, but I think publicly financed campaigns is one of the first things that I would work on.
Citizens United is wrong. Corporations are not people. Money is not free speech. And Oregon needs to be the national leader in campaign finance limits. I will present a bill and I will pass a bill limiting this huge wash of corporate money that comes across our borders, wiping out the voices of everyday Oregonians. Campaign finance limits first, and then we'll move on to other things like public financing of campaigns.
First thing I'd like to do is adopt the same standards that you abide by when you run for a federal office. I'd like to see it capped. Right now it's at $2,700 in the federal office. I'd like to see individual donors capped at $2,700. And let's get the big money out of politics, because frankly, it doesn't make any sense. I run re-election Lane County Board of Commissioners. I spend a total of $14,000. And so it's not about the money, it's about the narrative, it's about your message. First thing first, let's cap it at $2,700, just like you have to do when you run for a federal campaign.
I think it's very important that we don't confuse issues here. Citizens United was probably the worst decision the Supreme Court has ever made. Hopefully the new justice being appointed will actually change that, or Congress will inevitably refer a constitutional amendment. But that has nothing to do actually with the limits that we have in this state, and that is we have no limits. That's the decision of our Supreme Court. We have no limits on expenditures. We have no limits on contributions. I have sponsored in a number of sessions a constitutional amendment to put limits in place. I intend to do that as Secretary of State. And I will tell you, I will work to pass that, but I recognize that I'm not the one who passes it. It's the legislature that passes it to refer it to the public, and the public will ultimately make the decision. That's the process we are in. But it is time we put some realistic campaign finance limits back in this state, because the process has become just too embedded with special interests and too embedded with money.
Campaign finance laws are always discussed and rarely implemented. And one of the reasons is that when you put in limits, what you often will do is drive the money to where it has no control or no oversight. It's called independent expenditures. Now, we need to ensure that we have a level playing field for everyone, and that you don't just be able to buy your position because you have more money. But if we were to just put in arbitrary limits, the big donors would end up going and setting up what they call shadow campaigns, where they put on their own campaign for a candidate, and the candidate doesn't even know what's going on. There's no oversight. There's no there's no transparency. And so what we need to do is to ensure that what we do with campaign finance is make sure it's fair for everyone, and that we comply with the law and not merely grouse over a U.S. Supreme Court decision that we're going to be living with. Oregon right now uses transparency as its key, and transparency is what we have to live with until we have a way to implement something that will be effective under the Constitution and under the Supreme Court.
Thank you. This question would be for Brad Avakian first. The Audits Division currently doesn't have the power to compel agencies to act. How will you change that?
Well, implicit in that question is that there's something wrong with that. And I don't know that the law does need to be changed. This is a matter of culture. It's a matter of how you devote your resources and how you run the office. See, each of our five statewides are checks and balances against each other. As labor commissioner, I'm the check and balance on civil rights and wage and hour of all of the other state agencies. The Secretary of State is with audits. You will see aggressive performance audits from me and program audits to make sure that agencies are not just that they're using tax dollars properly, but that they are actually meeting the mission that they need to meet with that money. As an example, are we providing music and art and civics and shop class, PE, in our public education system? And if we're not, why? The trick to making those audits something more than dusty books on a shelf is to be able to leverage the legislature and the governor into action by shedding a light on the deficiencies. That's what I've done as your labor commissioner, and that's what I will do as your Secretary of State.
So performance auditors in particular have actually come under very strict guidelines set forth by the GAO. It can't be used as a weapon. It's just used strictly as information, and it's corrective in nature. So you have a performance audit performed. It's based on risk. And one of the things, so this is the difference, I think, between the Lane County Board of Commissioners and, say, the Secretary of State. When the performance auditor comes before us, she provides recommendations. We actually have the authority to give direction to make sure those recommendations are put in place. Not so much with the Secretary of State. But one thing that we do have is the bully pulpit. We have the opportunity to actually stand up and talk about this is exactly what has been taking place here. Here's the recommendations that we need to follow through. Make sure that your taxes are being spent efficiently and effectively. We have that opportunity not only to talk about it in a press conference, press release, but I think really go out to the public and say this is exactly what has been brought forth. These are the recommendations we need to follow through to make sure your money has been spent wisely.
The Secretary of State's office does three different types of audits: fiscal audits, performance audits, and IT audits. And sometimes in fiscal audits, you can find some things that actually must be corrected. Obviously, many of those involve federal dollars, and if they're not corrected, there may be some issue about the receipt of those federal dollars in the future. But most of the discussion here has been performance audits, and I think that's where I should keep my discussion. I think what's imperative is that when you find a problem within an agency, and the agency may correct some of those problems, that you don't drop the issue for the final issues that have not been addressed, just because they have addressed three-quarters of the problems that were identified, and that the Secretary of State's Audits Division stays on that agency and works with the executive and the legislative branch to ensure that those changes are made. Part of the problem now is audits are done, people talk about the changes that need to be made, then ultimately the audit's put on the shelf till 2 or 3 years later, and then you come back and you find the same problem. Audits are a clear way to improve the delivery of services, and I intend to do so as Secretary of State.
As Oregon's chief auditor, I will use that position to do what was intended, and that is to ensure that the people's money is well spent. I mean, when was the last time there was an audit of the Department of Human Services and foster care? I mean, we see over and over that there is a lack of oversight and a lack of care and a lack of ensuring that the money that we have is well spent. Now, my wife and I were foster parents, and we adopted a 10-year-old. We understand how important it is for these children to have care, and that will come by overseeing and ensuring that their agency has oversight. We have the opportunity to save billions of dollars. The energy tax credit, $968 million of Betsy and other tax credits that have been wasted. We haven't helped the environment in any way. We need to make sure that we audit so that this money that is wasted does not continue to be wasted, that we have accountability, and that the money that we have is well spent.
This is an excellent question. We do have three different types of audits, and they're critical. We did have an audit of the foster care system, but getting those results, getting those findings into the hands of someone that can actually make a difference is where I'm the strongest candidate for this job. I was the House Majority Leader. Now, the House Majority Leader actually has no power. All the power is the Speaker. She appoints the committees. She appoints, says where the bills go. She makes things. She has the authority to make things happen. I was an effective Majority Leader because I was able to have influence because I have very strong relationships and I knew how to work with other people to allow to make sure things
happened. And that's what I would bring to this office. When we had a, when we would have a finding from the audits, I would get it into the hands of someone who's an activist that cares about an issue, or the press, or the legislature, or the governor. And instead of leveraging someone to do something, I would work with people to build a team. That's the kind of collaborative leadership style that women bring to the table, and that's why I'm the best candidate for Secretary of State.
Thank you. Question here, I will begin with Sid Lykin. What can you do to help strengthen the business environment in Oregon and keep jobs at home as Secretary of State?
Well, what I found is when I served as mayor, actually the governor is really the really strong economic development director for the entire state. That's the voice. But as Secretary of State, you have some incredible tools, some areas that really the governor doesn't have. And one I'd like to focus in on is the Corporations Division. Recently, in fact, under Kate Brown, there was a what would they call a business assistant or small business advocate named Ruth Miles was hired. That's one person. Imagine having a small business assistance program in every part of the state regionally, in eastern Oregon, in central Oregon, southern Oregon, on the coast, the metro area, in right here in the Willamette Valley. You have people available who have this entire suite of information available. I was fortunate. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. My father's an entrepreneur. I was an entrepreneur. It was really easy for me to get started with a business. A lot of times people have a dream and they do not know where to go or how to get started. This is an incredible opportunity where we can help people not only get started but expand their business, create more opportunity for Oregonians, and also make sure we tell the nation and the world Oregon is open for business.
First of all, I think it's important to say that as Secretary of State, one of the areas that I would work on to improve the business climate is not actually just the corporate division, but Business Oregon, which actually has vastly more resources than the Secretary of State has to actually address the needs of business and ensuring that those dollars are spent wisely and that we actually get the level of return we should be getting from those dollars that are spent, and those are largely lottery dollars. But in the corporate division, some of the issues that need to be addressed is we've always talked about a one-stop shopping center. That's been a discussion for 15 or 20 years, and we have that. But it's not as user-friendly as I think it could be. Then the second area is the area where I worked with now Governor Brown to put in the advocate program, and we actually improved that in the last session, add some additional resources. That's been very important for businesses, particularly to work with state agencies when they're having difficulties. But the actual improving the business climate is both in the corporate division, but it's actually in Business Oregon, where the majority of the state resources go to assist business in the state.
I think Sid Lykin's suggestion about making sure that we have training and help on a local level is very important, and I really support that as well. But I bring something to the table that none of the other candidates do. I've actually gone out and helped bring jobs for Oregon. I've organized 10 legislative and business delegations to China, and we brought back contracts for over $1 million for Oregon businesses. And people say, so why did you go to China? Well, because that's where a third of the economy is. They have our dollars, and they want to buy Oregon goods. And so we go to China to help them focus on Oregon businesses and Oregon services, because as you expand businesses and services in Oregon, that creates jobs for Oregon workers. And we don't need higher taxes. We need more taxpayers with family wage-paying jobs. And we do that by reaching out and bringing dollars into our economy from other states and other nations.
The Corporations Division is a corporate registry, but there are a lot of things that we can do. And again, in funding the small business assistance position that Governor Brown brought forward, that was a help. That was a help to small businesses that needed help navigating the system. I also, as the former chairperson of the Export Council of Oregon, which is the Federal Advisory Board on International Trade for Small Business, would go out to other states and talk to them about why they should bring their business to Oregon, because we were good for exports. I would use the power of that office, working with Business Oregon, to reach out and build our international trade relationships, to show our businesses here in Oregon that growing their market is good, but growing market share is even better. If we can sell Oregon-branded products, and Oregon-branded products are very, very popular overseas, we can grow the business for Oregon-branded products overseas that creates jobs here that are good-paying, and Those people that are making money are paying taxes, and taxes go to schools, and that's what I care about.
I either help run or own my own business for 15 years, and I know when you start up a business in Oregon, you've got questions about taxes. That's the Department of Revenue, Workers' Comp. That's Department of Consumer and Business Services, Family Leave. That's the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Secretary of State's office under me is going to become a one-stop shop to help businesses get started and be successful. But for gosh sake, this is the state's second highest office. We need to make sure that we are watching carefully the day-to-day operations of the Audits Division and of the Elections Division. These things are critical. But you need someone in this office who's paying attention to what's going on globally, too. I'm the only one, I think, on this stage, for instance, that took a very strong vocal opposition to free trade agreements in this country, because it's that kind of action that ripped the mills. Well, you'll get your chance. It's that kind of action that ripped logs out from Springfield and shipped them overseas to Japan just for us to pay a premium to get the lumber back. Pick a Secretary of State that pays attention to those things, too.
Thank you. We're just about out of time, but I kind of have a yes or no question here, so we'll have some more fun. Oregon doesn't require a, again, quotes, paid for by statements on campaign ads. Would you push to require that? And I maybe it's getting to, if you remember, maybe a couple of cycles ago, well, you know, paid for, shine a light on all of them as they scurry into the corners of your kitchen kind of thing. I think this is getting to people putting their names where they're spending their money. So I'm just going to ask you all to go down the line. Would you push to require statements that identify people who are paying for those campaign ads? Mr. Vakian?
Yes and more.
Yes and more.
And
absolutely. We're unanimous.
Okay. Otherwise, we'd have another campaign going up here. But well, I thank everybody in the audience for the questions. We didn't get to them all. Some of them were answered with the questions that the sponsors had, and a couple of them were pretty close to the same kind of inquiry that you had of the candidates. But it is time that we start closing statements, and we're going to do that in reverse order. So Val Hoyle has first chance for 2 minutes at the podium for closing statement.
I want to thank everybody for being here today. In the Democratic primary, you've got a difficult choice in that you've got three qualified people. And I hope that I've earned your support tonight. And let me tell you why I'm running. There, I have the background and experience to manage the agency, but really my passion is elections. Now, I am very proud of the work that I've done in the legislature, again, whether it was clean fuels or tuition equity or background checks on private gun sales, but I am most proud of New Motor Voter, because the fact is, I know that sometimes it's not easy to vote. When I was living in Wisconsin, and we were going to vote, my husband and I were working split shifts so that, you know, we didn't have our children in daycare for very long, and I had $5 to pay the babysitter, and I went to the polling place that I had gone to before, waited 40 minutes in line, and when I got there, I was told I was in the wrong precinct. And I didn't have another hour, and I didn't have another $5 to pay for a babysitter, and I went home, and it was the first time that I didn't get to vote. And it was devastating. And I don't want that for anyone. And although we have vote by mail and it is easy, I think we should do everything possible to make sure that people have access to the ballot. Because whether it's military personnel serving overseas, whether it's students that are moving, whether it's seniors that can't get out of their home, we need to do the best we can to enfranchise every citizen of this state to participate in the process and, more importantly, to know that their voice matters. That's why I'm running. I am running from here in Lane County to ensure that everyone in this process knows their voice matters, know that they can have fair access to the process, and I hope that I can earn your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Dennis Richardson.
We have an opportunity to change the way that Oregon's functioning by having checks and balances restored to Salem. Whether it's the Democrats or Republicans, when one party is in control for too long, people get sloppy and there's no accountability. By having me as the chief auditor, I will help ensure that our programs, agencies, and departments are spending our money wisely. We will audit the poor performing school districts in our state and find out why some school districts are graduating nearly 100% and others are closer to 50%. We will audit the Department of Human Services and determine what the caseworkers need to help ensure that our children are safe. We will audit the Department of Energy and find out why certain brokers could sell credits at a sweetheart discount and others had to pay full amount. And yet there's been no full audit of this department. Almost $1 billion has been wasted on energy tax credits, and we have no accountability for it. Cover Oregon, $310 million spent on a website project? I mean, you can't make this up. If you didn't laugh, you'd cry because such a waste of money. And what are we going to do about it? Has there been a full audit of Cover Oregon? Have we learned any lessons to ensure that it doesn't happen again? We have not. The same thing goes with the Columbia River crossing, the bridge to nowhere, because we hadn't gotten the agreement of Washington State of where the bridge would even land. We spent almost $200 million in planning. I mean, the contractors got rich, but the people got poor because that money could have been used for educational purposes, for foster care, for our seniors. We need an auditor who will focus on getting down to business, not protecting party, but protecting the people. I'm Dennis Richardson. I need your support and your help to provide this kind of balance in state government. Thank you.
Thank you, and candidate Richard Devlin.
Thank you for this opportunity. I wanted to get a little bit more personal in this closing. I would compare my record, my progressive record, to anyone up here on the stage, but I'd like to tell you where that comes from in terms of how I grew up. I was the second youngest of 9 children. To say that we grew up in poverty would be an understatement. But the two things that my mother instilled in me was that education would be my pathway from poverty, and that whatever I do and wherever I go in the future, I have a responsibility to give back to the community. Let me say something also that I think isn't popular in some circles. I believe in government. I don't believe government can do everything, but I believe it can do important things. I believe in its power to do good. I believe in its power to spread opportunity, and I believe its ability to protect the incredible natural heritage we have as Oregonians. But as Secretary of State, to turn these beliefs into action and to give Oregonians confidence that it can be done, it means getting the details right. It means working to protect the integrity, openness, and inclusiveness of our election system. It means ensuring that government is efficient, effective, and financially responsible. And I believe I'm definitely the person that can be your next Secretary of State and do that job well, and I think that's important for you, and it's important for Oregon's future. I'm proud of what I've accomplished, but I think one of the underlying characteristics that I have is never to be satisfied, always wanting to do more. I want to thank you for this opportunity. If you're looking for a candidate who not only gets the details right, but whose moral compass points towards integrity and who has always fought for those who cannot fight for themselves, then I believe I am your candidate, and I hope you'll support my campaign for Secretary of State.
Thank you. And now, Sid Lycan.
As I mentioned in the opening, I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian, and what I have found is that there's not too many of us left anymore. I was able to grow up in a family where, in fact, I'll just put it bluntly for you, I grew up in a very blessed family. There's no doubt about it. But I learned some incredible opportunities from not only my grandfather and my father, but even before that, reading stories of my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, migrating here into the state, building a wood products company, putting people to work, building communities. And there's something that I learned. That's why I was so proud when, as mayor, we were able to shepherd in $1.4 billion of private sector investment. We created thousands of new jobs here in Springfield. As a Lane County Commissioner, we had to reorganize government. We had to make some very, very difficult decisions, but that has saved the taxpayers some $45 million. We went from 14 departments to 9, 7 separate health care plans down to 2. I mention this because the Secretary of State's job is an executive level position. You have to be prepared to make decisions. And that is what I'm prepared to do, is make decisions. I have no axes to grind. This is just laying out exactly what I bring to the office. Someone who can walk in, understand how an organization is ran, and also make sure it's efficient and effective for you as a taxpayers. I feel like that I bring good qualities, and not only that, a good, strong resume to be your next Secretary of State. Can't do it alone. And as a Lane County Commissioner and someone as a Republican in Lane County, I can tell you right now, there's not very many of us in this county. But we continue to win. We have a good story to tell. And we can bring that same can-do attitude right here. Not only that we have done here in Springfield and Lane County, but we can bring it back to state government as well. Let's get Oregon back on track. Let's get it to where we have been, and let's look at the future. I need your help. I need your support. Thanks again for having us.
Thank you, and candidate Brad Avakian.
Well, thank you, Springfield, and thank you, League of Women Voters, for a really terrific community event. You know, as your labor commissioner, when evidence came to me that John Minnis, who at the time a former state senator who was leading the state's state training facility for police officers, very high state office, and who was also appointed to that post by the same governor that appointed me labor commissioner, when evidence came to me that he was sexually abusing an employee, I investigated, I prosecuted. I did what had to be done to take care of the workers that were there and to do it on behalf of the people of Oregon. In the last couple years, when evidence came to me that there were workers at Southern Oregon University that were being cheated out of wages on the job, even though that agency answers ultimately to a governor, I investigated, I prosecuted. I made sure the workers got every single dime that they were entitled to. In this Democratic primary, it's not enough just to have a D after your name. Pick the person that you believe is the progressive Democrat. Pick the one that has for an entire career put our progressive values into action. And when you think of things like elections and audits and the importance of breaking down barriers, pick the one that has time after time again effectively put progressive values into action and that you believe will continue to do that as your Secretary of State. Again, thanks so much for the forum tonight.
Thank you. And let's have a hand for all of our candidates tonight.